Hey everyone, ready for another deep dive? Today we're looking into physical security and, well, let's just say it goes way beyond just locking the doors.
It really does.
I mean, you sent me some fascinating stuff, by the way, some really interesting sources.
Right.
Like, did you ever think that the height of your hedges could actually, like, impact your security?
Right.
It's pretty wild. So, where do we even begin with all of this?
Well, I think your sources make a really good point right off the bat.
Okay.
It's not just, like you said, about keeping bad guys out. It's about shaping the entire environment, how people behave in it, even how they perceive it.
So it's about like being proactive instead of just reactive.
Exactly. You're one step ahead. And that actually starts even before you think about fences and cameras and all of that.
Oh, really? Okay. So even before all of that tech stuff.
Yeah. It starts with location, believe it or not.
Really?
Picking the right spot for your facility, for your home, for whatever it is you're trying to secure.
I never would have thought of that as a security measure.
Most people don't, but it makes sense, right? This all comes down to one thing: protecting value.
Okay.
And that's, you know, obviously human life, yeah, first and foremost, but also data, assets, all of it.
Makes sense.
So if you build your facility right in a known earthquake zone or a floodplain, I mean,
you're kind of asking for trouble.
Exactly. You've already undermined your security from the get-go.
Yeah. If disaster strikes, you're already behind.
Exactly.
But your sources go even deeper than that, talking about visibility.
Yes.
Like just how visible your building is.
Right. And that might seem kind of, I don't know, obvious when you think about it.
Okay.
But picture this. You have a building set back from the road, kind of hidden away.
Okay, yeah.
Surrounded by trees, fences, whatever.
Hard to see what's going on.
Versus a building that's out in the open, clear lines of sight all around.
Yeah, that makes sense.
One's a much easier target than the other.
It's like advertising that nobody's watching.
Precisely. Out in the open, your actions are exposed.
A criminal's less likely to take the risk.
Exactly. The opportunity's gone. And that ties into this whole concept of CP2, you know.
CPT.
Yeah, crime prevention through environmental design.
Okay, I've heard that, but I'd love to hear more about it.
So it's basically designing spaces that discourage crime, like just by their very nature.
Okay.
It sounds kind of out there, but it's about influencing behavior, sometimes subconsciously.
Interesting. Okay.
So your sources had some cool examples of this. One was about, remember those desolate parks we talked about?
Yeah, yeah.
Where there's like poor lighting, hiding spots, nobody around.
Perfect recipe for trouble, yeah.
Exactly. Now imagine that same park, redesigned, well-lit walkways, benches positioned strategically.
So you can see and be seen.
Exactly. Open sight lines, maybe some landscaping to direct foot traffic.
It suddenly feels safer.
Right. And it's not just a feeling. The studies by the University of Maryland show these implementations can decrease robberies by like 74%.
Wow, 74%, that's huge. It's amazing how much of a difference the environment can make.
It's huge. And you know what else they talk about?
What's that?
Plant height.
Plant height.
Yeah, like those hedges we talked about earlier.
Okay.
If shrubs are too high, they become convenient hiding spots for someone trying to break in.
Oh, I see.
Keep them trimmed below 2.5 feet, you take away that opportunity.
Simple but effective.
Exactly. And that gets us to another core idea. Layered defense.
Layered defense.
Yeah, like think about a medieval fortress. You've got the outer wall, then the moat, then the inner wall.
Multiple layers of protection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So even if one layer fails, the others are still there to slow things down.
Okay, so how does that work in the real world, though? Like, what are those layers?
Well, your outermost layer is your perimeter.
Okay, the perimeter.
Fences, walls, maybe even natural barriers, if you're lucky.
Right, the first line of defense.
It's all about making it clear this property's protected.
And that you mean business.
Exactly. Then you've got your building perimeter, your second line.
So doors, windows, that kind of thing.
Right, but reinforced. Good locks, alarms, motion sensors, cameras, you name it.
So each layer gets tougher to crack.
Right. Deter, deny, detect, delay. It's all part of the plan.
Okay, so you deter them, deny them access, detect if they get through, and delay them as much as possible?
That's the idea.
But, I mean, what happens once they're inside?
Ah, you're thinking like a true security pro.
Well, you gotta think about every angle, right?
Exactly. Securing the interior is just as important.
So what does that look like?
Think access control systems, security personnel, strategic placement of those foes.
Okay, so controlling movement within the building.
You got it. And, of course, interior surveillance as well. Cameras can be your best friend.
So it's like this carefully constructed system, each part working together.
Exactly.
But it's got to be more than just tech and barriers, right?
You're right. That's where the human element comes in.
The human element. Okay, so it's not just about building a fortress. It's also about making sure the people inside are prepared and know how to respond if something happens.
Exactly. That's where the human element comes in.
Right.
You see, even with all the best tech in the world, your people are your first line of defense.
That's a good point.
Your sources, they really hammered home the importance of training.
Okay, training, yeah.
Making sure employees know what to look for.
Suspicious activity, that sort of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Recognizing threats, knowing how to react, having those protocols in place.
So it's about creating a security culture, not just installing security measures.
100%.
Because even with the best preparation, sometimes stuff happens.
Right.
Equipment fails. Or you have a natural disaster, something you just can't predict.
And that's where you get into, like, your business continuity planning.
Okay, so that's like, what do you do when the worst case scenario actually happens?
Exactly. One of your documents mentioned this concept of maximum tolerable downtime.
Maximum tolerable downtime. Okay.
Yeah. Have you heard of that?
I have, but I'm sure some of our listeners haven't. Could you explain that a little?
Basically, it's the longest your organization can afford to be down before it really starts to hurt.
Financially, operationally, all of that.
Right, exactly. Like how much downtime is too much downtime? Every business is different.
Right.
So you got to know your limits.
And then have plans in place to get back up and running as quickly as possible.
Exactly. Redundant systems, backup power, offsite data storage, that kind of thing.
So if something happens to your main facility,
you're not dead in the water.
You have a backup plan ready to go. Makes sense. But that all sounds expensive, to be honest.
It can be, yeah.
So how do businesses decide what's worth it?
It's a balancing act.
Right, right.
Weighing the cost of those measures against the potential loss from downtime.
Okay.
Some industries, like if you're talking about finance or healthcare,
yeah.
Every minute counts.
High stakes.
High stakes.
Yeah.
You might need top-of-the-line redundancy.
Mm-hmm.
Others, maybe not so much. But you should always have some kind of a plan, no matter what.
Right. No one-size-fits-all approach.
Exactly. You tailor your security to your specific needs, your vulnerabilities.
Makes sense. You know, one thing I read that really stuck with me was this example of a museum.
Oh, yeah. What about it?
It was talking about how they used all these different techniques to protect their artifacts. They had, like, the environmental design, you know, like we talked about.
Okay.
But then they also had all this high-tech security layered on top of it.
So like a multi-pronged approach.
Yeah. And it was interesting to see how they balance those things.
But a delicate balance.
Because on one hand, you want to protect these priceless objects, right?
Right.
But you also want people to be able to enjoy them.
Of course, you can't have a museum that feels like a prison.
Exactly.
So how did they do it? What kind of stuff did they have in place?
Well, they talked about things like, you know, having open sight lines within the museum.
Okay, so that's your CPT, right?
Yep, exactly. Making it so there are no easy places to, you know,
lurk around, yeah.
Right, no blind spots. They had strategically placed security cameras, obviously.
Of course.
But then they also went further, talking about things like reinforced display cases,
sure,
motion sensors, even infrared cameras to detect heat signatures, things like that.
Wow, that's going all out.
Yeah, they did not mess around. But then it went back to that human element again.
There it is again.
They made a really good point about training the staff.
Right.
Because the staff, they're the ones interacting with the visitors every day.
They see everything.
They're the ones who are going to notice if somebody's acting suspiciously or trying to pull something off.
Exactly. They're like your eyes and ears on the ground.
Right. And that just goes back to what we were saying before about how important that human element is. It's not just about the tech.
It's about the people, the awareness, the training.
Yeah.
You got it.
It's all connected. It's like that old saying, an ounce of prevention
is worth a pound of cure.
Exactly. But it seems like in this case, it's not just about preventing incidents.
What do you mean?
It's also about being prepared to minimize the damage if something does happen.
Right. That's huge. And it highlights something so crucial about security in general.
What's that?
It's not static. It's not like you set it and forget it.
It's constantly evolving.
Exactly. You got to adapt, stay ahead of the curve. The threat landscape changes every day.
So complacency is the enemy.
100%.
Yeah.
Always be thinking, what's next? Where's the vulnerability? What haven't we considered?
But it doesn't have to be overwhelming, right?
No, not at all.
It's about making informed decisions based on the best information available.
Exactly. And that's what I love about your sources. They give you the knowledge to do just that.
They really do. And what I think is so cool is that they go beyond just the, like, technical stuff.
Yeah.
They talk a lot about human behavior, psychology, perception.
It's fascinating stuff.
It really is. It's like, how do people interact with their environment? How can we design spaces that are both secure and enjoyable to be in?
Right. It's not just about building walls and fences. It's about understanding how people behave.
Exactly. It's about creating an environment where people feel safe, not trapped.
You got it. It's about making security invisible but effective.
Subtle but powerful. Mm-hmm. I like it. So we've covered a lot of ground here, from picking the right location to, like, literally the height of your shrubs.
It's amazing how many different factors play into it.
It really is. But there's one thing we haven't really touched on yet, and your sources, they actually brought this up quite a bit.
Oh, and what's that?
The future of physical security.
Ah, yes.
Where are things headed? What's coming next?
Well, technology is a big part of it, of course.
Okay, that makes sense. What kind of tech are we talking about?
Your documents mentioned AI.
Artificial intelligence?
Right, exactly. But also things like facial recognition, predictive analytics, powerful stuff.
So instead of just reacting to things after they happen?
These systems are getting proactive.
Wow.
They can analyze data in real time, identify potential threats before they even materialize.
That's incredible. Like, what would that look like in the real world?
Imagine a security system that can tell if someone's loitering a little too long or if their behavior's a bit off.
Okay.
It flags it for a human operator to check out. Or, you know, those big crowds we talked about?
Yeah.
Predictive analytics, it can anticipate crowd flow patterns, identify potential bottlenecks before they cause a problem.
That's amazing. But with all of this advanced technology, I mean,
there are definitely ethical considerations.
Right, exactly. Like, what about privacy? Especially with something like facial recognition.
That's a big one.
You can't just have cameras scanning everyone's faces without some serious thought about the implications.
Absolutely not. Your sources were very clear about that. You have to have rules, regulations, ethical frameworks in place.
Because technology, it can be a powerful tool, but
it can be misused.
Exactly. So it's not just about what we can do, it's about what we should do.
100%. Yeah. And finding that balance, that's going to be crucial moving forward.
Well said. Well, I'd say we've definitely done a deep dive today.
We covered a lot, that's for sure.
It's amazing how much goes into securing something, whether it's your home, your business, a whole city, even.
It really is a fascinating field.
It is. And thanks to you and all this research, I feel like I'm way more aware of all the different angles now.
That's the whole point. Knowledge is power, right?
It really is, especially when it comes to something like this.
The more you know, the better prepared you are. And hopefully, a little less likely to, you know,
become a victim.
Exactly.
Well, on that note, that is all the time we have for today's deep dive. But don't worry, we'll be back soon with another fascinating topic. Until then, stay safe, everyone.